Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle.
I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the greats check, too, okay? Because we'll get the bunch on third and short. Even 51 greats. Even 51 greats.
And the rest of the 2008 NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast lead over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
Welcome back inside the playbook here on Patriots.com radio. I am John Rook, and it seems like it was 2 months ago since we last did the show, but I think it's also partly because it was last Thursday when we last played a game, and we didn't do a show since, what, last Wednesday, last Wednesday.
Yep.
Last Wednesday. So anyway, it's going to be a little different today. I'm going to focus a little bit more today on the Dolphins game upcoming rather than revisit so much what we did against the Jets last Thursday for a couple of reasons. Number one, it was last Thursday.
Yeah, it was a long time ago.
It was a long time ago.
In football.
Weird the way the schedule has broken out here. So we've got that to try to get by. I am going to revisit just a couple of things I wanted to point out that I think could have a bearing on future games and future situations for this football team. But, you know, the first thing I got to start off with today is the fact that, you know, Joey Porter's running his mouth again.
What else is new? I mean,
I just, you know, I'm opening up the sports pages this morning. I'm going online. I'm reading two or three other newspapers, as I like to do, you know, every day. You know, got to love USSportsPages.com. Great website, right? Good plug there for somebody I have. By the way, the guy who just bought USSportsPages.com used to be my agent. Not anymore.
Oh, really?
Not anymore, but he used to be. He's a nice guy. You know, I just didn't really have any, there just was no need there anymore. Mm-hmm. Why pay somebody something when you don't have to?
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
So he's a good guy, and I'm happy for the success. It's just, it's a great, convenient one-stop shop for, you know, trying to get all of your reading done, you know, that kind
and
of
you,
thing.
And it sort of pulls sports pages from around the country
around
in one site?
Yep. From one site.
Just links all them this, all to that thing?
Links them all together to that thing. It's great. I'm sure a lot of the people who listen to this program are aware of what I speak. Hmm. But, you know, I'm reading through a couple of those, you know, sports pages this morning, and, you know, Joey Porter says this, Joey Porter says that, Joey Porter does this. Does, and I'm like, good Lord. You know, now, when this happened earlier this season, before the Dolphins came in and spanked the Patriots here, you know, he ran at the mouth, and everybody was kind of like, ha ha, okay, Joey, you're a big dummy now. The Patriots are going to get you. And look what happened to the game. So I guess the question I have here is, what do we do with this? And do we do anything with it? Do we just ignore it and let him run at the mouth?
Well, it's unfortunate that it's happening in a year when he's able to back it up. Because in the last few years, Bill says he's always the same player he's been, but he's had a drop-off the last few years. There's a reason why, you know, his play has suffered. He hasn't been the same Joey Porter that he was, say, 4 or 5 years ago in Pittsburgh.
Mm-hmm.
This year he is again. And he's, I think that's fueling a lot more of his talk because now he feels like he's actually going out there and backing it up. Where in past years he would talk a lot, but then the game would come and you wouldn't hear anything. You wouldn't hear his name at all during the game and people wouldn't really take him seriously. Now people are taking him seriously, but I think it's more of a fact you don't focus on what he's saying, but you focus on how he's playing, and he's playing well. So I think you have to you sort of have to consider him in your game plan, whereas before, maybe a year or two or three ago, I don't think he was really the playmaking force that he was before then and is again now. So I think you have to take him into consideration. I don't think you really pay attention to what he's saying, though.
No, but it's clear to me, though, Eric, that he did have a pretty good game, obviously, against the Patriots.
He had a great game.
And the fact is he was able to pretty much back up all of his mouthing off before game one.
Mm-hmm.
Now, granted, the circumstances are somewhat different. And the biggest circumstance that's different is the improvement of Matt Cassel and whether or not, and the Patriots offensive line in particular to protect Matt Cassel.
Right.
So in that regard, I'm wondering how this changes you know, how those guys down the hallway in the locker room, how this looks at things, mm-hmm. knowing that they're going to be more confident, that they've got a quarterback who's better able to lead them down the field. I mean, my goodness, as far as I'm concerned, Matt Castle was every bit as good as Tom Brady in terms of leading the team from behind when he threw that touchdown pass last Thursday night to tie up the Jets.
That was clearly
his best
game. That
was very Tom Brady-esque.
It really was. And overall, that was Castle's best game.
Easily. Statistically,
each game he plays is becoming the best game he's ever played.
Which is great. All know that the problem right now is not with him in the offense.
Not at all.
He's on the other side of the ball.
Right.
And we'll get to that. But the fact is, though, is that, you know, where those guys are concerned down the hallway, knowing that this guy's running mm-hmm. in the mouth, based on what they did largely the last time,
yep.
how does that change? How should it change their attitude?
Well, I don't know if it'll change the attitude as much as it might change their game plan. Something interesting that Josh McDaniels said yesterday on the conference call he had with the media. I'd asked him about, I was asking him about changes in game plan calling this year as opposed to last year, and then somebody followed it up with Castle's mobility and how that's played into the way he changes, the way he's calling the games. Right. And he said something interesting, which was they've always had the design rollouts in the playbook. They used to call them with Brady every now and then. But Castle, as we know, is a much better runner than Brady ever was. I think we can all agree on that.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
Whether it's when the pocket breaks down and he runs straight up field, or whether it's rolling out to his right or his left, scanning the field, and either throwing on the run or deciding to take off and run with it. Mm-hmm. They weren't really calling those kind of plays early on in the season because I think their focus was trying to get Castle develop as a pocket passer more and to try to stay in there and throw the ball downfield more. Now that he's getting a lot more comfortable and it's pretty much his offense now, I think you're seeing the last few weeks a lot more of those design rollouts where if they know they're getting pressure, they try to alleviate that or mitigate that by sending him out of the pocket.
Mm-hmm.
So I think against the Dolphins, you might see a lot more of those plays called than you did in week 3 when they played Miami. Because Castle's at a level now where he's comfortable enough,
right.
And he can handle that, and he's not just rolling out and automatically thinking run first. He's rolling out thinking pass first, look downfield, and if nothing's there, then I'll run with it. Whereas earlier on, his first thought I think was his instincts were taking over,
yeah.
And he was just running with the
right.
ball. So I think look for a lot more of the rollouts against Miami this time. Than you had seen in week.
I think he's a very good quarterback on a rollout. I think he does a very good job. And I heard I can't remember if it was a national show or maybe it was an EEI show. I don't know, but I heard a fan say that on his rollouts last week against the Jets, he reminded them of, and I know that he kind of laughed after he said it. He said he reminds me of the way Steve Young used to roll out of the pocket, where he would. Upfield, and at the last second he would tuck it under and take off. Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, you're comparing him to a Hall of Fame quarterback, which is kind of silly, but at the same time, I understood immediately what the caller mm-hmm. was saying. I said there is a lot of that Steve Young characteristic about him that he seems to be developing. And frankly, my first thought after Thursday night's game, even though, you know, you're disappointed like everybody else, if you're a Patriots fan, that is, of course.
Sure.
My first thought was, I think he just made himself a buttload of money.
Well, yeah.
Not a boatload, a buttload.
Well, what's the difference?
It's a lot larger.
Depends on who you're talking about.
You don't hang around with people I hang around with.
it was by far his best game, and I think regardless of whether they won it or lost it in overtime, because
yeah.
they didn't even have a chance to win it in overtime, but the fact that he got them there was made it his best game. They were down 24-6.
Yeah, yeah.
And I agree with you. If he stays healthy and continues to progress, which I have no reason to believe at this point he won't.
He's pretty much shown an upward curve here. So
then, yeah, I think you're right.
He's
going to do well for himself in the offseason. There was another point I was going to make about his scrambling. Oh, the
yeah.
Steve Young comparison
yeah, right.
was that because he's such a good runner and people know that he's a good runner when he tucks it and decides to go, which Steve Young also was.
Well, that's what I mean.
That makes him that much more dangerous when he does roll out and he's sort of half pumping, half looking downfield, because it's almost like a college team that runs an option.
That's
you have to have somebody
right.
at contain, mm-hmm. and he sort of can't really make a play at the quarterback until the last second, and sometimes that's too late.
That's very true, and I guess that's kind of what I'm getting at here, because teams now are going to have to prepare for the run-pass option now that Matt Castle can throw at them. I mean, we saw gaping holes up the middle of the Jets' defense.
I've never seen that before.
Gaping holes.
It was ridiculous.
They completely had vacated. They had vacated the middle of the field because of the threat that the wide receivers had presented, and because, you know, a guy like Wes Welker is running a clear out, you know, and he's taking the linebackers and everybody with him.
Yeah.
And so the middle of the field is wide stinking open. So teams now have got to put somebody in there to make sure they account for that. And if they don't, they're going to risk getting burned again. And when they do put somebody in the middle there, you would think that there's going to be some single coverage somewhere, that as long as you're accurate with a throw, you're going to make somebody pay. So this is where the development of Castle as a quarterback is continuing to pay off some dividends for the team offensively.
Sure.
You know, I mean, look at the numbers on the sheer, you know, black and white of it all. 400 yards passing. He ran for 62 rushing. He is the first
player. Led the
team
that game.
He is the first player since the AFL-NFL merger to have more than to have 400 or more passing and 60 or more rushing in a game. That's 38 years.
It's impressive.
That's I mean, that, you know, that's above guys like, you know, Young right now.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's, you know, I guess you have to wonder now, well, is this going to be a statistical anomaly, or is he going to go on and, you know, back this up with some other solid performances? And obviously time is only going to tell that. But when you think about that just on its surface, you'd have to think that, you know, the development here, and yeah, you know, first of all, you have to, I think, you know, give credit to the Patriots for sticking with him, number one. Mm-hmm. Number two, and a very close number two here, give credit to Matt Castle for taking advantage of the situation, mm-hmm. and, you know, picking it up and doing it. Now, the problem is he's got to get some guys to kind of help him on sure. the other side of the football, because yep. that's where this team is now lacking. Mm-hmm. Whereas earlier in the year, when he was just beginning his tenure now as the Patriots starting quarterback, we all thought, okay, this team can rely on defense a little bit to keep them in games, and they did for the most part. But we also saw last week that this defense has got some major holes in it. A lot of it, yes, due to injury, but when have we ever used injury as an excuse around here? Mm-hmm. And so because of that, now some other guys like Castle has stepped up on offense. Like we've seen Ben Jarvis, Green Ellis, the law firm himself, step mm-hmm. up on offense. You know, like we've seen, Wes Welker certainly now, who's gone 10 consecutive games with 6 more catches, first player in NFL history to do that. I mean, we've seen these guys step up now. Now it's time to see guys like Pierre Woods step up, you know, who's got to be in there now for Adalys Thomas. Mm-hmm. It's time now to see guys like Mike Wright step up, you know, and even to that extent, Jarvis Green when he's in there, in mm-hmm. case there are some other injuries. We've lost Terrence Wheatley now to the IR for the year. And I realize that's not a big deal, but it certainly lessens your numbers.
It takes away from your depth and your ability to do things.
Absolutely. And, of course, obviously you've lost Rodney Harrison, so you've got plenty of opportunity now for these
right.
guys all to step up. And so far, you know, they stepped up miserably on Thursday.
And they didn't replace on the roster Terrence Wheatley with another cornerback or another defensive back.
Nor did they replace Thomas.
Well, Thomas hasn't been placed.
That's what I mean.
He hasn't even been placed.
He hasn't been placed
on
the IR.
He's still on the active roster.
Correct, which leads me to believe there's somebody there thinks that there's
right.
a shot he can return.
Right. But it was interesting. They promoted rookie tight end Tyson DeVry to the active roster when Wheatley went on injured reserve, which depletes your depth at a position that was already depleted to begin with, which I thought was kind of interesting that they made that move. We'll have to see how that works out. But
right.
But you're right. Every major injury that they've sustained this year, the player who's replaced that person, whether it's Castle for Brady or Merriweather for Harrison, Green Ellis for Maroney, or I should say Maroney slash Morris, because Morris has basically missed time as Maroney's understudy, all of these guys have come in and performed to a level that you can't really complain. They've done their job and then some. And so now I think you're right. Pierre Woods, the guy you mentioned, Thomas, you know, they haven't made any moves with him yet, but the longer he stays out, the more Pierre Woods is going to get playing time, and the more he needs to make people, I don't want, not to forget about Adalys Thomas, but at least fill that void and not do anything. Even when Nick Kazier was out, Mark LaVore stepped in there, And you never heard Mark Lavoie's name, which is a good thing for an offensive lineman because he was doing his job. He wasn't getting beat. He wasn't getting penalties.
I think we also have to look at the entire defensive picture when you have to add a guy like Sean Crable, who never saw a down of football this year. Tank Williams, who never saw a down of football this year. These are all guys that could have figured into this numbers and rotation. It could have figured into the position rotations. Williams is going to be that hybrid guy anyway, linebacker slash safety. It's all taking a toll. And so now, this defense, you're seeing Gerard Mayo, I guess to his credit, especially on the defensive side here, develop a lot more quickly than the Patriots probably needed him to, because we're seeing him now drop back in coverage.
Yes.
He's got the tight ends generally coming out of the backfield now a lot of the time. You're seeing him come up, and he has to play solid run stuff defense because, frankly, there are some deficiencies there when it's just Teddy Bruschi out there. And God knows we all love Teddy, but he doesn't have the ability today that he had 3 years ago.
Yeah,
4 years ago.
It wasn't just Castle's best game. It was Mayo's best game.
Right.
20 tackles. I said this to the guys in the press box at the time, that he was playing possessed. Mayo was against the Jets.
He is as good a young linebacker as I have seen, certainly in my time, here with the Patriots, which is now 16 seasons, but, working with this team. But, I've covered pro football now for the better part of the last 25 years. And I got to tell you, there are very few linebackers, young guys, especially rookies, that have come in and made a significant impact like he has. Well, to me, right now, he's a slam dunk defensive rookie of the year.
I agree with that. And it's interesting that the trend the last 3 years has been middle linebackers winning that award. D'Amico Ryans won it in Houston in 06.
Deserved.
Patrick Willis won it deservedly
last
year. He may be being exposed a little bit out there right now.
Yeah, but he had the impact. Just go on his year last year, and I think you'd have to say, he wowed a few guys.
I think it's interesting that position is the one that's getting it of late. And if Mayo wins it again, that'll be 3 years in a row. But, no corners, no safeties, no defensive linemen.
Right.
The impact, it seems, is the opportunity to make an impact is there more at that position than at the other, at the front or in the back there. I just think that's kind of an interesting facet.
Yeah, it's really the entire season, when you look at it, has been sort of an interesting lesson in evaluation and self-evaluation. How good are you? How good are we? How good are these guys? They could be good if, it's probably a lot of the answer that you come up with. And to see the offense improve and to see the defense regress has been one of the rather unusual, I think, little turnarounds that we've seen over the last few weeks. It doesn't mean that the Patriots are in a bad spot. Fact is, you're in second place. That's the way it is. You're a game behind. You have a chance to pull back even for first place after this weekend. This is a huge, huge game for New England.
Oh,
they lose this game,
it doesn't look good.
It does not look good at all, and I'm talking about wild card or otherwise.
Anything, right.
It does not look good. This season hangs on this weekend's game, as far as I'm concerned.
I still think that's pretty accurate. I still predict, as I did earlier in the season, that it will come down to that Buffalo game.
Well, undoubtedly, I think probably to decide some things. I do think, though, the Patriots could have a playoff spot decided. And if they win this Saturday or they win this Sunday, I think they'll have a playoff spot. I think ultimately they'll get in. Whether or not they are a division champion or not could certainly come down to that last game at Buffalo.
Yeah, and you know what? It's unfortunate that if they come down to a tiebreaker, because the Colts aren't going to win their division.
No.
But let's say it comes down to the Patriots in second in the AFC East,
right,
and the Colts in second in the AFC South.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the Colts have that tiebreaker because
they
won the head-to-head.
Well, that's true. So you have to hope that both of those guys are going to get in.
Now, let's hope it doesn't come down to the AFC West, the Chargers coming in second, because
Chargers are already 2 games back, and they're 4-8. So, the Patriots right now have a 2-game lead, on them.
They do, but let's say something weird happens in the next 6 weeks. If they become tied,
right,
they lost the head-to-head to the Chargers, too, John.
Yeah, I realize that. Well, I'm not even counting the Chargers right now, though, Eric.
I'm just looking at the whole field of playoff possibilities and saying, that New England really better win the division.
Well,
I'm just saying they can't really hope to get a wild card.
No, although statistically speaking, it's New England, it's Miami, and it's Who else? Indianapolis.
Well, Indianapolis now, yeah.
And do we can't do we
Baltimore.
Throw, in Baltimore. Thank you. That was the other one. I was trying to think, do we throw Jacksonville in there? And I said, probably not right now. And Baltimore. So there's four teams basically fighting for two spots right now.
And it could be more as the season goes on. As, like I said, I don't think this is all going to shake out until week 17.
Well, ultimately it won't. But as far as any chance to win the division, and you yourself just said the Patriots need to think about winning this division to get in.
I think so.
It's this weekend.
Yeah.
You need to beat Miami because now you have two divisional losses. Mm-hmm. You can't afford a third divisional loss.
Right.
You'll lose all tiebreakers. Even if everybody else loses out, you're going to lose all the tiebreakers if you end up tied with these guys. You've got to be 4-2 in the division.
And especially having both of the, two of those losses be against Miami.
Teams, yeah, and New York.
Yeah.
That's you've got to find a way. You've got to win this game.
I mean, at least they split with New York.
You got to pull out all the stops. It's all the stops, and then of course, then your next critical game will be that last game against Buffalo. But this is as far as I'm concerned. This is the season. You play to win here. You don't worry about week 12, week 13, week 17. You don't worry about that here. You worry about this one. This is week 12, isn't it? Yes, it is. Okay, you don't worry about week 13.
Right.
Yeah, the off week always kind of throws me here. It's the 11th game, so no. It's actually week 12. So you don't worry about week 13 or beyond here. You worry about this one. You got to win this one before you can even think about the next one.
Oh.
And this one
never is, more so than now.
Never more so than now. That should never be a problem with these guys down the hallway. But frankly, sometimes I have to admit, especially when it comes to the divisional games, I just don't see a sense of urgency like I saw maybe against some other teams. And I don't know if it has to do with the fact that they've been beating up on divisional opponents. I mean, fact is they're 37-11 against divisional opponents since 2001, which is the best record in the NFL.
The NFL overall, yeah.
Overall against division against teams within your own division.
Yep.
Since 2001, the Patriots' first Super Bowl season. And so I'm wondering if maybe just over time now, when you beat the crap out of guys, if you just don't start taking them for granted naturally, if that's not human nature a little bit.
Well, I think they got their wake-up call with this Miami team in week 3.
I hope so.
And I really don't expect them to come out and lay an egg like they did then.
Well,
And plus, with this week having the extra day to work, because they played last Thursday, so they're here today. Today is actually a Wednesday. They're going to have two Wednesdays this week for all intents and purposes, John. Their typical Wednesday is starting today.
Yeah.
They'll have today again tomorrow. And then their regular Thursday and Friday schedule. So they're having an extra day, and I think that couldn't have come against a better opponent than this one because of what happened in week 3. So I don't expect them to look like they did back then. They're a different team. Castle's a different quarterback. They've learned their lesson on defense, I know. I'm confident that they're going to come out and handle it this time.
One other thing about
Castle. It's going to be tough, obviously.
Yeah,
but
One other thing about Castle from Thursday night, though, Eric. I did not realize this, and I don't know if you knew it or not, but the 62 yards rushing he had was the most by a Patriot quarterback in 30 years.
Oh, I didn't know that, but I'm not surprised.
I find that remarkable. It was the most in any game by any Patriots quarterback other than Steve Grogan. And the 62-yard performance, the sixth highest single-game total for a quarterback in Patriots history. Grogan has the franchise record. He rushed for 103 yards against the Jets back in 1976, which is pretty weird. But Grogan had the last 60-yard rushing game against Oakland back in 1978.
Wow.
Most in 30 years for a Patriot quarterback.
That's impressive.
I just, when you couple that with the fact it's a 400-yard game and, it's the most total offense for a QB and since the NFL-AFL merger, it's...
And all those stats were in regulation. They didn't get the ball in overtime.
They didn't even get the ball in overtime. So you can't taint it with an asterisk, He played extra time. He didn't get the ball.
No.
That obviously is a sad thing. We'd all love to have seen him get the ball because I think a lot of people feel like if we'd had the ball, they'd have scored. And the game would have been over. All you need is one stop in that game. 3rd and 15 on your own 16-yard on the opposing team's 16-yard line.
Yeah.
Or 15-yard line. 15-yard line and you give up a 16-yard gain.
They actually had given up a 14-yard gain and then Merriweather came up to make the tackle on Dustin Keller and he fought for the extra 2 yards and got the first it, maybe a better hit and he doesn't get it. But you know what else I was thinking of was that overthrown touchdown to a wide open Randy Moss.
Yeah.
Could have changed the complexion of that game.
Yeah, there's no doubt.
That was
certainly you can lay one on Castle's, shoulders on that one because it was just overthrown. It was overthrown.
Yeah, I wonder if it was overthrown though. because Moss has been listed lately on the injury report with a foot injury.
And I think he just didn't get to the
ball? I wonder if that has affected his performance, because now twice in the last few weeks, Castle has thrown a pass downfield to him, and it's been overthrown. And that never used to happen.
Well, you have to admit that.
So I just wonder
that if catch
that
catch at the end of regulation was pretty remarkable.
Oh, it was, but as far as...
It wouldn't have anything to do with his foot injury,
right,
potentially, but...
But as far as your breakaway speed, getting open downfield, I just wonder if that has affected Moss at all. The fact that he's been listed with that, and we've seen two overthrows, and the big thing with him was always, you can never overthrow me.
Can you ask him that, or will he not?
Well, he doesn't really talk.
Yeah.
So we'd love to ask him a lot of things.
Yeah, no kidding. I get it. I understand it completely. Well, obviously, folks, as many of you who are familiar with the program are aware, this is Nitpick Tuesday. So, you know, if you still have some nits that you need to pick over last Thursday's 34-31, was it 34-31? Yeah, thank you. I almost forgot the score. 34-31 overtime loss to the Jets. Please feel free to email those. webradio@patriots.com. That's the address. That's how you get a hold of us here. 508-543-7482 is the telephone number. Same number as well. You can call in. I'm actually kind of in an interesting way here. Glad that there's been this much room since the last game, because it's given me a chance to reflect a little bit and really decide what was important in a negative sense about that game last week. First of all, I feel like everybody else, Patriots shouldn't have lost that game. They should not have lost that game.
Yeah, it's disappointing that they put that much effort into coming back.
A lot of effort into coming back. Problem is, they should have never fallen in that 24-6 hole to begin with, but again, that's all on the defense's shoulders as far as I'm concerned. I have to admit that, you know, two things stand out. Number one, Keller, how they could not keep him from ripping them right up the middle,
yeah,
time and time again.
And he would have had a touchdown that if he didn't drop the wide open pass.
How can you not adjust to that? I'm totally and completely baffled by that one. After the first drive of the game, when he ripped him for a couple up the middle, how do you not adjust for that? How do you not account for it?
Well, it's interesting, John. The first half, they seemed like the Patriots could do nothing right. Then at the end, when Gaffney caught that touchdown to make it, I think it was 24-13 for the half, it seemed like from that point on, the Patriots could do nothing wrong. They came out in the second half, and they were stopping Favre and the Jets' offense at every turn, and they were moving the ball at will. It was ridiculous how easy they could move the ball downfield. They shot themselves in the foot twice in the third quarter, once when Watson caused his own fumble, and then when Copen and Castle mistimed the snap there, and they lost about 25 yards on that one play. Because I think, again, that changes the whole momentum of the game. I mean, eventually they tied it up, but they could have had more of a lead at the end there, and it wouldn't have gone into overtime.
Right.
So, in a way, I'm happy with the way they were able to come back, but very disappointed in all the missed opportunities that they had. And defensively, they made enough. Bill said afterwards they didn't really make many adjustments in the game.
Well, that's
they just executed better.
I think that's why they kind of had me pulling my hair out a little bit on that one. I'm like, okay, so you didn't make many adjustments. Why did you? How did you not, you know, find a way to adjust to the tight end being wide open up the middle?
That's true, and it's just it's amazing that without making many adjustments, if we're to believe what he said, and we have no reason not to, how different the two halves were. Like I said, the Jets did everything right. The Pats did everything wrong in the first half. It was vice versa in the second half until the very last drive when the Jets had to score, and they did. And then New England had to score and get into overtime. And then the Jets get the ball in overtime, and they could move. I don't understand how it happened, and it's puzzling, like you said, that Keller was able to make those plays. When they played the Dolphins a few weeks ago, the first time around, that middle of the field was a soft spot too, and they were getting burned there all game. They took away the deep and the edges on Pennington, but he carved them up in the middle. We saw the same thing with the Jets, and I think they have to find a way to do something to protect that middle this week against the Dolphins, or else it's going to be the same story.
Yeah, that's the one nitpick that stands out, and the second one is a little, well, at this point in time, is a little less, I guess it's a little more defined than I give it credit for being. I'm ready to put in my own, this is a completely personal opinion, okay? I'm ready to put Benjamin Watson in the Lawrence Maroney category.
I think a lot of people are.
I mean, I realize that his overall numbers, you know, certainly were pretty good, but it just seems like, you know, he can't make the routine plays. He gets no yak, so to speak, no yards after the catch, which is what we thought we were getting when we got the guy. It was kind of like, oh, my God, here's a tight end with wide receiver speed, and we're not seeing it.
He has all the athletic tools.
I have to admit, you know, and he drops some of the most simplest plays and blows some of the most simplest routes. Certainly I think the Patriots got more production out of him than they have out of Maroney, but I'm about ready, I think, just to put him in the Maroney category of I'm ready to move on here from this particular person. Let's go find somebody else.
He's had his chances, John.
He's had his chances.
And I'm mystified every week when I see him. He makes, like you said, some of the most ridiculous catches seem easy. And some of the easiest catches, again, that play with the fumble, he caused his own fumble.
Yeah.
He was going to put two hands on the ball, and he knocked it out.
He knocked it out of his own hands. I mean, I don't understand. I mean, that's personal discipline. I mean, you can't. It's a lack of awareness. And if you have a lack of attention to detail in your business, what usually happens, Eric?
You get booted for someone else,
right?
Which had me wondering during the game. They kept throwing his way a lot. Castle kept finding him open and throwing to him. And at one point, I think I looked to Paul or Andy and Fred and said, where's David Thomas? I mean, he's certainly proven that he can catch the ball.
No doubt. We've seen him lay out for balls.
Yeah. I was wondering where he was. He's one of your guys from Texas. And he's certainly, since he's gotten here, shown that he can catch the ball.
Yeah.
Why wasn't he in the game?
I don't know. Can't answer
it
that
It didn't
question.
Seem like they were using the tight end for a lot of blocking in the running game. So it was predominantly as a pass catcher. He has been starting games over Watson for the most part, and Watson has come in
as a run blocker, he has been starting.
And they kept throwing him the ball, and I'm thinking, where's Dave Thomas?
I don't know.
That's another thing that I was
Do we
was
read anything
by.
Into the signing of Tyson DeVries into this? I mean,
maybe. Yeah, I think you do. I mean, like I said, it's curious to me that a defensive back went out and they didn't replace him with a defensive back, because I think that's an area where they need as much depth as they can get.
Let's go get a tight end. We need a tight end. Somebody.
But maybe they feel like they need help at tight end as much.
Do you happen to know right offhand what his contractual situation is? Watson.
Who's Watson?
Yeah.
I don't off the
I'll
top
have to
of my
look,
head.
I'll have to look it up. But, you know, I just kind of curious. I
seem to think he's going to be a free agent.
Well,
I could be wrong, but I seem to think that
if that is the case, it's time to move on.
Yeah, I think it might.
I mean, I realize you got another year with Maroney, and so that would be something I'm sure we'll discuss, you know, once we approach the draft and next summer and everything else. And my guess is I think he's an odds-on favorite to stick around one more year. That's just my guess.
Maroney?
Yeah.
He'll have his chance.
I think he'll get one more shot.
I think it'll be Chad Jackson Redux.
Yeah, I think he's going to get one more shot. But what's going to happen is he's going to fail miserably based on what we've seen.
He could either make the team and be an impact player, or he's going to be on the street.
And it's going to be Chad Jackson, you know, part two. You're absolutely right about that. I totally agree with that assessment. So, I mean, why waste the time, really? But I think the Patriots are going to give him the benefit of the doubt because he's a first-round draft pick. Same thing with Watson, because he was a first – well, was he Taylor the first?
He was a first-round pick.
Yeah, Taylor in the first round. Since he was a first-round pick, my guess is they're going to continue, you know, to give him the opportunity this season if he's a free agent.
Right.
This season he's going to get all the chances he can, but in the offseason they've got to make a move on this guy and say, see ya.
Yeah, very disappointing. I mean, high hope. When you look at the guy, you think, how can this not be?
You got to go get that kid from Oklahoma State. Have you seen that tight end, Oklahoma State?
No.
His name escapes me. Strippers, do you know? You know what's the kid's name at Oklahoma State? He's really good.
Tight end, huh?
Yes, really good. He's big and he's got hands.
Two gender. Can you effort that?
Yeah. Oklahoma State tight end. I saw him against their game against Missouri, and then I saw him against their game against Texas.
Texas, yep.
And I was really impressed with this kid. Yeah, he's got, you know, the ability to come off the line. He's got decent speed, but he's like 6'8", 6'7". Wow. He's a huge kid. Big guy.
Brandon Pettigrew.
Pettigrew, thank you. Brandon Pettigrew. Brandon Pettigrew.
All right.
That's I've seen Todd McShay and Mel Kiper and a couple of other people who have him right at the top of the tight end list, you know, in terms of draft eligible guys to play that mm-hmm. position. And I think, you know, I don't know whether or not the Patriots have a shot at him, but I'm just saying that's the kind of guy, you know, if they could go get a guy like that, they should.
I think when Andy and I go to the combine in February, that's going to be a position where we're probably going
to
be paying some attention.
Yeah, you should.
So that'll be a name we'll be looking for.
Yeah, you definitely should. All right.
That's fun. Have you ever been to the combine?
No, I mean I've actually I'm one of those losers that will sit there and watch it on NFL Network.
It's fun being there in person. you see more of it.
I watch it.
You see more of the actual workouts by staying home
watching it
than we do. We actually get to talk to the guys afterwards.
Right.
In like the big media workroom, which is great because you get to see a different side of them. We don't really get to see the workouts. So you're really beating us on that end, but we get to get more of the mental aspect, the personal aspect, which is good though because you can learn a lot about a player that way. It's a fun 4 days. It's very busy, very regimented, but you get a lot of stuff done and you see everybody.
That's the end of February, right? After the Pro
Bowl, it's usually the end of February.
Yeah. Everything's all.
It's usually Pro Bowl. They take 2 weeks off and then.
Combine.
And then combine.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Happens pretty quickly there. All right, webradio@patriots.com is the email address. We're looking for your nitpicks from the game on Thursday, but frankly, we're looking for your nitpicks overall this team through, you know, 10 games. And, you know, I'm not sure anything is entirely correctable at this stage of the game. I mean, I think the season is far enough along now where you almost have to plug holes. You almost have to fill in gaps. You almost have to make do. I don't know that you have enough time once you go past the halfway point of the season as we have now. I'm not sure, at least in my thought process here, that you have enough time per se to really fix things in a permanent nature. I think it's almost a stopgap until, you know, you get to the offseason. And I don't know how you feel about that. But in terms of, you know, where your nitpicks are and what you are most disappointed with this football team, that's where I'm kind of focusing on, number one. And number two, before I let you go and take care of some work here, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you thoughts about the Dolphins, because obviously, you know, we did say we were going to start focusing a little bit more and more quickly on the Dolphins this week, and it's such a huge game anyway. I mean, are the Patriots really 25 points worse off than Miami?
Well, let me start with your previous nitpick.
Okay.
And, you know, about a month or so ago, maybe 6 weeks ago, we talked about how the schedule breaks up into quarters. First 4 weeks, you kind of get you don't really know who you are. You're sort of trying to figure out who you are. After the eighth game, which is about midseason, you kind of have an idea of who you are or are going to be. And by the third quarter, the 12th game, you pretty much know what you got. And then it's a sprint in those last four games to try to either make the playoffs or just finish the season.
And we're arriving at the third
quarter.
And we're
at that point. I think we know what kind of team we have. We have a quarterback who's played much better every week. Better than I think most people expected when this season started. And like you said earlier, the team is not losing games because of their quarterback.
Right.
Just the opposite. I think they're actually starting to, and this Jets game would have been a perfect one. They would have been winning games because of this quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got a team where on offense, I don't think there's much of a change from last year. You've got a good passer and a great running game. You've got a solid offensive line. The offense, we know what we have on offense. On defense, a little more skeptical because we don't know what we have week to week. Some weeks, the defense looks like they're getting pressure, they're playing well in the secondary. Other weeks, like against the Jets, they let a big lead go up, then they have to fight and claw their way back. So there are more questions in my mind defensively than there are offensively. I don't really have a problem with the offense at this point. Defensively, it's just their consistency. They're not showing me the same thing every week. I can't rely on the D-line every week. I can't rely on the defensive backs every week. One person I can rely on every week, it seems, is Jerod Mayo, which is good because he was your first-round pick. He was a high top 10 pick. So I think of all the things, the defense is still where we were 8 weeks ago where we didn't really know what we had with them. And there are a lot of injuries that they've had to overcome, and I applaud them for being at least in this point and still being in the hunt at this point.
But
we've taken shape. But it's also in a year where a lot of teams are good and a lot of teams aren't good. if that makes sense. Well, it's the parity has really hit the NFL.
Early in the year, we didn't think there was a dominating team. Now the NFL
looks like there might be a couple.
There are a couple of teams who are really good and are head and shoulders above everybody else in Tennessee and New York.
Mm-hmm.
The Giants, that is.
Right.
And then there's probably about 15 other teams that you can lump in after them.
Right.
And I think the Patriots are right on the verge of being in that lump of 15 other teams.
Yeah, and they're fighting for it. And I think they're doing a good job of staying in it,
mm-hmm.
despite all the injuries. And other teams have injuries, too, but the Patriots have really been hit hard this year. They were really lucky last year. They've been just as unlucky this year and have had way more injuries than most other teams have had to deal with. But they're coming through. The people who have stepped in are coming through. So I think that's where we are with this team. I feel confident when the offense is on the field. And I have my questions when the defense has to be on the field.
You need a playmaker defensively. Somebody's got to step up and make a play.
Well, I think it's time, you know, like you said, Mayo started off staying in the middle, making tackles against the run. Now slowly he's starting to drop back into
coverage.
I'd love to see him rush the quarterback a little more, maybe make an interception, return for a touchdown or something like that. Maybe start making more of those kind of plays now that he's familiar with the defense.
You're down one playmaker without Adalys Thomas.
Yeah.
So you now need somebody to step up and be that person that can make that stop or that can make that pick. You need a playmaker in there. That's what the defense is sorely lacking. I kept thinking, you know, while the Jets were driving in overtime, I kept thinking somebody's got to step up and
make a play. Yeah.
Somebody's got to make a play.
Well, Gary Guyton made a great knockdown on that second and 15.
Yeah.
And you had to figure, okay, third and 15, they're not going to give this up. And, well, they did, unfortunately. But we've already covered that aspect
Keller.
Of it. to answer your other question about Miami, it's interesting. They're a much better team under Sperano in his first year than I expected them to
be. Coach of the year.
I never expected them to be in this position at this point.
Coach of the year, as far as I'm concerned.
I thought
Sperano?
Maybe.
Yeah.
I thought maybe 4-5 wins would be what you could expect
four.
Out of that team.
I think people were looking
would be
at
a successful three
or
turnaround.
Four. 3 or 4 would be a step in the right direction. Yeah.
They've way surpassed what I thought. Mm-hmm. And they're doing it in a way that nobody expected,
mm-hmm.
running a college offense. But it's worked.
Give them credit.
It's worked.
Give them credit.
You know? Okay. I wonder now if this is the time of year where there's enough of a book on that offense. Like when New England played Philly last year. They were blowing teams out up to that point. Philly finally figured out the book on how to play this team. And from that point on, all the games were close, if you remember.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if we're now getting to that point in the season where the Wildcat has developed enough of a book that teams can say, all right, we know what we're doing now to stop this. And I wonder if that, you know, I mean, they barely beat the Raiders. Statistically, they killed the Raiders. But it came down to a field goal at the end or else they would have lost that game.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody in the press conference today pointed out that they were charting how many Wildcats the Dolphins ran, and they really only ran one successfully, and it was on a scoring drive. The rest of them were either short gains or no gains.
I'd be stunned if Miami doesn't run it half a dozen times.
I'm sure they're going to try it.
Based on the success they had.
I'm sure they're going to try it, but like I said, they've done a great job with Sperano and turning this defense around. Porter's having a great year. Pennington's playing a lot better than I thought he would have played. Brown and Williams are playing out of their minds. I never expected that out of Ricky Williams after his troubles in the league.
Got to give him credit, man.
So they're winning, but I wonder if now if they start to
come back a little bit more to
this game will be telling.
Yeah,
if they can beat the Patriots twice, then
they're
legit,
for real.
Then they're for real.
Yeah, you're for real. You don't want to go out on a limb and say who's going to win.
Oh, I'll pick the Patriots. I know that's going out on a limb, but I say they're gonna. I say they'll do it.
All right.
I think they're gonna find a way to do it.
All right. Well, I know you got stuff to get off and do. So thanks for sticking around and being.
Hey, no problem. I enjoy it.
I
have one last nitpick.
Here. Go.
What happened to the Friars?
Thanks for bringing that up. I don't know,
my
man.
My God.
I don't know.
I have to hear Paul Perillo for the next
Mr. Northeastern.
4 months that his team beat the Friars.
He's right. He's right. He's absolutely right.
John.
They
were horrible from the free throw line, weren't they?
Not that I want to get into a whole huge college basketball dissection, you know, here, but the fact is that Northeastern has a pretty good team this year. There's a reason why they are picked number 2 in the Colonial Athletic Association behind Virginia Commonwealth because they're good. They have an NBA caliber player in Matt Janning. There's no doubt about it. You're going to hear more about that kid this year.
Mm-hmm.
But Providence, you know, they were horrendous from outside.
And that's one thing Keno Davis said he wanted to stress this year was more three-point shooting.
3-point shots, and they were terrible down the stretch from the free throw line. They were 8-for-16 from the free throw line in the second half.
That
but
has
doesn't
been,
anyone want to talk football?
That has been.
We have been.
We did 45 minutes straight. I love college hoops, especially the Friars.
Listen, then, then you're loving this 24 hours of Hoopalooza or whatever they're calling it on ESPN and ESPN2. And I did one of the games on ESPNU last night. I did the BC game against Loyola last night. Yeah.
How'd that turn out?
Oh, Boston College killed them.
All right, I would hope so.
Killed them. But, I mean, you know, it's just all part of that whole 24 hours of nonstop basketball going on. This time of year is great because you can get football with basketball. It's awesome.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
But the Friars' Achilles heel has been their free throw shooting the last few years. Mm-hmm. They just can't seem to get it right. I don't understand it.
They're going to learn really quickly. I mean, even they shoot 12 for 16 from the line. You know, shoot a piddling 75%, which is what you should shoot. You know, at the minimum, that game goes into OT. So, you know, they didn't hit free throws.
And I have one last one, and I really am going to go.
Okay.
I need you to root for Yale this weekend in football.
Oh, okay. Whoa, I know exactly why you're going to say that. Because if Yale can beat Harvard in the game, all Brown has to do is beat Columbia, and they will be undisputed Ivy champion.
That's right. They will win it outright.
Oh, I can root for Yale against Harvard.
So please, I'll need your help.
I can root for Yale against Harvard. There's no problem with that.
All right.
Phil Estes is a good friend, the head coach at Brown. Mm-hmm. I did the Brown football games well over a decade ago. Which you remember because that's when we were working in local radio
together
in Providence.
That's right.
And, obviously I'm sorry that they stubbed their toe against Yale a few weeks ago. Yale's got a pretty good team. So I would give Yale certainly at least an opportunity to beat Harvard. But Harvard's been very good. The only loss Harvard has all year is to Brown.
Yeah.
So, in terms of the Ivy League race, Brown can win it outright. If they beat Columbia, the worst they can do is a share for the title.
Right.
And Still, either way,
is great. But
it's only going to be the fourth Ivy championship in school history.
Right. But I'd love to see them win it outright because that's been their motto all year, win it outright.
Yeah. Well,
so there's still a chance.
If they take care of business and Yale beats Harvard, then it's theirs outright. So
go Bulldogs.
Okay, there you go. Way to go.
All right, John.
Thanks, Eric. We'll talk to you. All right, let's pause here for a timeout, but we're sticking around for a while yet. Brian Lowe from Patriots Today will join us at some point in the second hour of the show, as he normally does on our Tuesdays. We got plenty of time to get to your emails today, your nitpicks for the Patriots or nitpicks on the Patriots concerning last Thursday's loss to the Jets or just the status where this franchise, where this team is right now through 11 weeks, 10 games heading into this game against Miami. Nitpick. Come on. Dissect and analyze yourself. You know you want to. A lot of you do. You sit there and you talk about it with your friends, your coworkers, your family, anybody who will listen to you go on ad nauseum about the Patriots to the point where they're begging you to shut up, okay? You don't have to shut up to me. I want you to speak out. Give me your thoughts. Whether you think they're ridiculous or not, now's the time. It's Nitpick Tuesday. Webradio at patriots.com, 508-543-7482 is the telephone number right here inside the playbook.
Mexican Grill?
I love this Qdoba Catering.
If you've got a group of folks to feed, Qdoba Catering is totally the way to go.
You've got the hot taco bar.
The hot nacho bar.
The hot naked burrito bar.
Did I mention that they're hot?
I make the phone call and they take care of everything.
People come and they
just help themselves.
They come with everything you'd need to feed a group of hungry people.
Marinated grilled chicken and beef.
Three kinds of salsa.
Fresh lettuce.
Guacamole.
Cookies and
brownies.
Homemade tortilla chips.
Everything.
But we get Qdoba Catering for all kinds of different occasions.
Tailgate parties.
Soccer games.
Birthday parties.
Baby shower. For my son's graduation party. It's perfect for office meetings.
You open the door to the conference room, you get the smell of Qdoba.
Hot bars are totally unique.
It's incredible. People love it. It's fresh.
Affordable.
That's the easy way to plan a party.
That's what I love about Qdoba Mexican Grill.
That's what I love about Qdoba Catering.
Have a group to feed? Order a hot taco, nacho, or naked burrito bar from Qdoba Catering and give them food they'll never forget. What are you going to love at Qdoba?
Big games mean big parties. Feed 20 or more of your friends with a Qdoba hot taco, nacho, or naked burrito bar from Qdoba Catering. It's fast, fresh, and budget-friendly. Now with 16 Massachusetts locations, opening September at Patriot Place in Kenmore Square. Full menu available at Qdoba.com. Patriot Place in Foxborough is the ultimate shopping, dining, and entertainment destination in New England. What's your Patriot Place experience?
We took the kids to a movie at Showcase Cinema Deluxe and finally went to Red Robin. The burgers were amazing. It was so much fun. Everyone loved it.
We had girls' night out at Patriot Place last weekend. A little shopping, dinner at Davio's. It's just like the one in Boston. And we had drinks at the cutest little wine bar called Tastings.
Experience Patriot Place. A once-in-a-lifetime experience every day.
Honestly, I'm here about once a week. I always find great deals at Christmas Tree Shop and Old Navy. And the shoes at Off-Broadway are unbelievable.
Patriot Place is located next to Gillette Stadium in Foxborough with convenient and free parking.
Bass Pro Shop and Eastern Mountain Sports have everything I need for my camping and hiking trips. And we love CBS Scene Restaurant. They've got about a million TVs. And their outdoor deck looks right into Gillette Stadium. It's so cool.
Log on to patriot-place.com for more information. Patriot Place. Everyone wins. We know you have a busy day ahead of you, and mornings are always tough to get through. So stop by your local Dunkin' Donuts today and grab a freshly ground, freshly brewed Dunkin' Donuts coffee. It's the perfect thing to get you going in the morning. Dunkin' Donuts coffee is made with real Arabica beans, which give it that rich flavor everybody loves. And while you're there, try the new egg white flatbread sandwich from the new DD Smart Menu. Choose from two delicious varieties, turkey sausage or veggie. Both served on multi-grain bread. With under 300 calories, you can now make a smarter choice for breakfast. So, stop into your local Dunkin' Donuts today and try one with a medium hot coffee for only $3.99. Price and participation may vary, plus applicable taxes. Limited time offer.
When you've got a lineman-size hunger and want the awesome, authentic taste of Gillette Stadium at your tailgate or right at home, tackle that appetite with Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Try Sac Attack sausages, First Down Franks, or Patriots brats in a wide variety of flavors at home, at the stadium, or at the game. And get your crowd cheering for Gridiron Grillers. They're great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are all you'll need for the perfect tailgate or home barbecue. Check out all of the Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Mile and hot Sac Attack sausages, Patriots cheese brats and beer brats, First Down Franks and more. Patriots Gridiron Grillers go great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are available at Big Y, Demoulas Market Basket, Hannaford, Johnny's Food Master, Roach Brothers Sudbury Farm, Shaw's and Stop and Shop, and distributed by Agar, Associated Grocers of Maine and Associate Grocers of New England and CNS Wholesale. Patriots Gridiron Grillers, when you just can't wait for Sunday.
Welcome back inside the playbook, Patriots.com radio, Patriots playbook. I'm John Rook. Thanks to Eric Scalavino from Patriots Football Weekly for sitting in on the opening portion of the program. And Brian Lowe from Patriots Today will be around shortly. Webradio at Patriots.com is the email address. 508-543-7482 is the telephone number. I was going to save this for the end of the program, but I'm going to bring it up now just because it's kind of on my mind here. As Eric and I are talking, and he's got to go off and do a bunch of other things around here. And forgive me if this has already been talked about ad nauseum by the PFW guys, but I have to say this. Just because you can't have a relationship with someone over an extended period of time and not feel a little bit of a loss around here. I don't know to what extent people have said, but there were some cutbacks here at Gillette Stadium over the course of the last few days since the game last Thursday night, and there were a couple of people involved in the marketing department and with the PFW staff that had worked very closely with Gary Grudecki being one of them over the past 8 years specifically. Here on Patriots.com radio, he's really one of the ones that helped bring this whole radio program block together for the New England Patriots. A lot of his expertise was depended upon in order to launch this back in 2001, such as we did. Obviously, Mike Parenti, who's a very, very solid, very good young reporter who was a victim of the cutbacks as well, for PFW this past weekend. And Mike's he's got a good future ahead of him, so I know that he'll land somewhere very quickly. But without those two guys around here being a part of our efforts for the coming weeks, I just wanted them to know, not that I expect that they'd be listening today, but I wanted them to know that they will both be greatly missed. My own relationship with Gary, goes way beyond just doing the web radio. I know many of you know that I've worked with Gary for the last 10 years or so in terms of the game entertainment with the public address and the music and the whole first down bit that, Gary and I came up with back some 10 years ago, even though this has been my 16th year with the team. We didn't really turn it into what I would call an entertainment art form until right about 1998, 99. That's when we first, launched the whole first down thing that we do now at the stadium. And we worked real hard on that together in an effort to make this a different sort of place. Because I know many of you Patriots fans realize, what an experience was like going to old Foxborough Stadium. And largely, unless you were just a dyed-in-the-wool, hardcore football kind of person, it was not a positive experience to go to a game around here. I mean, there were, a lot of fights broke out in the stands. Not that they still don't. They do, but with way less frequency than they used to. A lot of drunken people. It wasn't a great place to bring your family. It certainly wasn't a great place to bring your kids. And when they hired Gary back in the late 90s, he had a lot to do with converting the thought process and converting and changing the way we all look at the game-going experience as a New England Patriot fan. It's true. It's very true. So it's not just the web radio and doing the silly little drops and the things that you hear on the shows and, and all the bits and all the roles that we like to play around here. Gary had a huge, huge part in helping to convert and change over the way this franchise did its business every Sunday and the way that this franchise has been looked at by others around the country and around the world. I'm soft pedaling. I'm not overblowing this. He had a big part in that. And we spent a lot of hours talking about how we can do things to energize the crowd and get them involved and make the crowd more of a, of a 12th man. We spent a lot of time talking about that. And I know Gary did as well with all the other members of the team and marketing department, of which he was a part of, here with the Patriots and Gillette Stadium. So we're going to miss him. And he, too, will land very quickly on his feet. I have no doubt he's a very talented individual, as Mike Parenti is as well. But I could not go any further through this program today without mentioning that. And I realize that may or may not affect your enjoyment of the Patriots and you're following the Patriots one bit, and it really probably shouldn't, and Gary would probably be the first person to say that. But I would be sorely remiss if I did not mention it here, because things that you listen to on this web radio program, things that you read on this website, things that you experience and hear and see and listen to and talk about, because of your game-going experience here at Gillette Stadium, a lot of it is due to Gary's creativity and his hard work and his sweat equity that he put into his time as the game entertainment guy with the Patriots. And so we're going to miss him a great deal, and I wish him the best of luck. In the meantime, both Jason Dvorkin and Dan Tugender are going to fill in capably. And everything here in terms of the web radio that we do and in terms of the programming that we have and in terms of the game day operations that we go through, nothing's going to change. These two guys have learned at Gary's knee, so to speak, over the course of the last 4 to 5 years. They're both bright, intelligent, eager, hardworking guys, and it's been my privilege to work with them for the last 4 years, and I will look forward to many more hereafter. So there you go. Consider it said and done. All right. Webradio@patriots.com is the email address. This one comes from our friend John. And John says, John, a lot to talk about in this long stretch since Thursday's game. Overall, a very good performance with a few issues in the process. Castle looked great, but still has no long ball. Secondary is stepping up, but still showing their vulnerability. Special teams looked to struggle a bit. The D played great without Tiny and the A-Train. In my opinion, two things lost us that game. Number one, mistakes by the Pats. Ben Watson's fumble was inexcusable. When he started to fall, he instinctively put his hands out to break his fall. And that may be fine on the playground, but not when you're holding a football and you just got a first down. I couldn't agree more. I mean, you know, you're going to break your fall and you're going to fumble the ball. I mean, that's just unconscionable for a football player to do. The ball is first. And if that means you take a spill, you take a spill. The ball is first. You know, Eric mentioned it just a little while ago, John, but I just, you know, that was just an inexcusable fumble. And John also says the premature snap was not even close. Yeah, where the ball went over Castle's head and he had to take a 25-yard loss. Castle was directing traffic as the ball went by him, not calling for the ball. Yeah, I don't know that anybody sufficiently explained what happened there. I don't know that anybody even asked Dan Copen about it. Copen had a rough night himself. He got dinged early, and, you know, it was not one of his finer moments, to be certain. But that play certainly took the Patriots out of, you know, scoring position in terms of the drive. That was a drive killer if there ever was one. And another drop by Gaffney, another drop by Watson. I was pulling my hair out by halftime, no doubt. And then John says, number two, the bad calls by the refs. Now, I don't want to get fined for calling them iffy, so I'll just say they were awful. Want proof? Opening kickoff, Ray Ventrone gets lit up hard. Immediately after the hit, his blocker dropped on top of Ventrone, his hands on Ventrone's shoulders, holding him down and getting in his face. Nothing. The holding call on Vrabel. The non-calls on half of our receiving corps. Randy Moss making an amazing end zone grab while giving Ty Law and a piggyback ride. Yeah, I have to admit the holding call on Vrabel at the goal line was a pretty bad call. We can say it now. It was a bad call. The problem is, though, is that, you know, when you're lurking in the area and an official thinks he sees something, he's going to throw the flag. He's not going to go, what did I really see? And then sit there and analyze it. His first instinct is to throw the flag. And then if he's really wrong and gets overruled on it, well, then he can pick the flag up. But if no one overrules him on it, the flag is going to stay. See, this is where you're guilty until proven innocent, rather than you're innocent until proven guilty. In football, as in most officiating calls in sports, you are guilty until proven innocent. And this is a perfect example of that. You know, he's in the area. He's in the neighborhood. They're standing, you know, behind one another right there on the goal line. And, well, you know, the receiver's not moving, so somebody must have been holding. Well, as we all know from upon further review, no, they weren't. But the referee didn't pick up the flag, and unfortunately the Patriots got, you know, killed on that one. So, yeah, yes, there were iffy calls. There were bad calls, okay, but those really can't be the excuse for losing the football game. It's just kind of part of doing business, you know, in the NFL. You have to find a way to overcome the bad calls. Most of the time, this Patriots team is able to do that. And I think we all realize that they've got a pretty good history of putting themselves in a position to win games, even when, you know, calls are going against them. But this team is fragile enough at this stage where, you know, they do need the benefit of calls to help them out and to give them an opportunity. And they did not get that on Thursday night, so I thought. And they all hurt. They all hurt. Jack, this is a request to any and all members of the offensive line. If you have the chance, can you please take the penalty and shove a cleat in Joey Porter's big mouth? Okay, I guess that's a personal appeal there. I'm so sick of this guy. He is still whining about warm-ups from the last game. Hey, dummy, maybe the team showed you no respect because you talk crap about us for the entire week before. What did you expect, cookies and milk? Embarrass this bleep, and his only words will be, wah. I think that's how you pronounce W-A-A-A-A-A-A-A-A-A-H-H-H-H-H-H-H-H-H.
I think it's wah.
Oh, it's wah. It's not wah. It's wah. Okay. Thank you, Dan. Thank you very much. Fair enough. Fair enough. All right. Here we go. What is this one? Oh, okay. Somebody's sending me some Okay. Okay. Wonderful. Thank you for sending all your personal emails to everybody, you know, on PFW. I could care less. all right. Todd in Nova Scotia. This is out there, but hear me out. Matt Schaub was traded for a swap of first-round picks and two second-round picks. If Castle continues his current trend and plays better and better down the stretch, he will have played in more games and at a higher level than Schaub did. Schaub got a 6-year, $50 million deal. Castle will get at least that much, probably $20 to $25 million guaranteed. Could the Pats franchise Castle tell his agent to work out a deal with another team? The Pats would take less than two first-round picks. They would be due in compensation, maybe a first and a third or two second-round picks. And then would the unsigned franchise tag still cost $11 million against the cap? Okay, you're making my brain hurt, Todd. I am not a capologist, nor do I play one on the television or radio. He says here, would the two young players the Pats would get in return be more valuable over the length of their contracts than the $11 million they would have to eat next year? Well, I'm not sure what it would still cost against the cap. My guess is, and this has just been my experience on the cap, you have to err on the side of caution because you just don't know. So my guess is, yes, it would count. I don't see the Patriots in any form or fashion franchising Matt Castle. It cost him too much money. Then again, I could be wrong if it is determined that Tom Brady's rehab is going to take him well into training camp or beyond next year. Now, granted, they'll have to make a decision on Castle well in advance of that. But, you know, these guys are going to do their homework. They're going to, you know, look at the progression. They're going to, you know, talk to the doctors. They're going to talk to Tom. They're going to figure it out. My guess is they'll string out the process probably as long as they can. My guess is they'll make an offer to Matt Castle, you know, to keep him around, and Matt and his agent will probably politely say thanks, but no thanks. We're going to go shop. Just a guess here. My guess is they could threaten, and I don't know that that's necessarily a threat. That's probably a terrible word to use here. But my guess is they could at least, you know, offer up the idea of potentially using the franchise tag. And then, of course, he would end up having to be, you know, pay the average of the top five in the league, which is just, that would be remarkable for a guy who, you know, hadn't started an NFL game before this year since he was a senior in high school. But you could certainly make an argument that he would be worth it based on what we've seen of him thus far and his progression this season with this team. They'll find a way, I think, somehow to work this out. I think Matt Castle also realizes that while, yes, this is probably his one and only opportunity to pick up a big payday as an NFL professional, he wouldn't have this chance unless the Patriots stuck by him and unless the Patriots told him, hey, you're our guy. So, I realize that this is a business, and you have to look at it as a business, otherwise you're going to get kind of run over here. But I just have a sneaking feeling that Matt Castle is going to allow the Patriots the benefit of the doubt here because of the opportunity he has been presented and the confidence they showed in him. And I think he will give the Patriots an opportunity to sign him. And again, I don't know this based on any information or anything else. It's just a hunch based on the kind of guy that I think Matt Castle is, and that's based on my talking to the guy and based on listening to what he's had to say since he's moved in as a starting quarterback. Just a hunch. Now, ultimately, I do not believe Matt Castle will be here next year. I think he'll be able to go find himself, a good, solid, multi-million-dollar deal for several years, and he'll probably have a chance to start, you know, at a place like San Francisco. If Brett Favre retires from New York, he can end up with the Jets. And then Matt Castle becomes, you know, persona non grata and enemy number one, A, after, I guess, Eric Mangenius. And you know, but you can't blame the guy because if there's a job opening, I mean, you know, it's just like you. If you work for FedEx and FedEx lays you off and UPS is going to offer you a gig, what allegiance do you have to FedEx? None. You're going to go take the job at UPS. Same thing. Even if you don't get laid off, you're working for FedEx, UPS makes you a better offer. better hours, more pay, maybe more time to spend with your family, you're going to go to UPS. Same thing here. Just so happens it'd be against the dog-ass Jets, but you can't blame the guy. That kind of thing could very easily transpire in the offseason. It absolutely could. It's a believable scenario. I don't happen to think that Favre is going to retire again, so I think it'll end up rendering the point moot. But I do think, though, that a place like San Francisco, maybe a place like Seattle, let's see, who else might be looking for quarterbacks? Those are two spots at least. Maybe Kansas City, maybe. A place like that could be looking. I mean, there are probably four or five spots that be looking potentially for quarterbacks. And if he gets an opportunity to be the starter, yeah, that's going to be his priority. And it should be. Just like it would be with you or if you were in his shoes. Sometimes we have to take a step back. And we really have to try to put ourselves in someone else's shoes. I mean, it's hard enough to do. We kind of do it all the time. We all like to think that we were capable of being athletes and playing at that high level and making that kind of money, even though none of us are. But you have to put yourself in Matt Castle's shoes for at least a split second here and say, you know what, if I had gone through what he had gone through and I had the chance to do this, it'd be stupid, absolutely stupid not to do it. Not to do it. Got to do it in that regard. So, you know, that will be one of the major, major stories of the offseason once we get to that point in time. That'll be a big thing for all of us to follow in the spring draft, you know, mini, mini camp, you know, time frame between, you know, April and the 1st of July. So that 3-month period between April 1 and July 1, you know, when rosters are shuffling and guys are cutting deals and before, you know, when you go to your passing camps and your rookie camps and, you know, you go through the draft process and then, of course, you know, 1st of July, you're roughly 3 to 4 weeks away from training camp actually getting started. That'll be a big, if not the big topic of conversation. So that'll be fun to look at. Can't say that it'll be a lot of comforting to go through, but it'll be fun to look at. All right. Jack says, my concerns about Miami. I know that in the Jets game we went to an all-passing offense, but did you notice the absence of Ben Jarvis Green Ellis? Where did he go? Even the few runs that were made in the second half were run by Kevin Falk or Heath Evans, and I'm hoping it's just my imagination, but when I don't see the RB group out there, the running back group out there, I panic. With all the injuries, can you blame me? Well, because I think you could sort of answer your question there, Jack, because they were in the passing mode. I mean, you're down 18 points, all right? Down 24-6, so you kind of figure out a way to get back into this as quickly as possible. And even, yes, in the second half, they were still largely coming from behind, and so they like Kevin Falk and Heath Evans better as pass catching and pass blocking options. So that's why they were out there. Had nothing really to do with Ben Jarvis Green Ellis's, you know, ability to run or what have you. It's just that there were better options out there. That's why they have those guys. You know, guys have roles on this team, remember? So because they have roles, you know, the Patriots are going to do the best they can to put guys in position to succeed by keeping them in their roles in which they excel, in which they play well. I really believe that's all that it was. Sure, I'd love to see more of it. But then that would have called for more instances in which to run the football, and they just were not in a position to do that. He also says, what happened to Ben Watson? Year to year, he is so inconsistent. You know, Eric Scalavino and I just opined about that in the opening hour of the program today. And like I said earlier, I believe now that I have arrived at the point where I am ready to put Ben Watson in the same category with Lawrence Maroney. Classic underachiever. I'm not ready yet to call him bust. I'm probably closer to calling Maroney bust than I am Watson. But I certainly will put the two of them together in the classic underachiever category. And you have to. They're both first-round draft picks. Is either one stood out other than for their negatives to you? No, I don't think so. That's a shame. The things that stand out about Watson are his spectacular gaffes. The fumble, for instance, you know, against the Jets last Thursday. I mean, you know, it just, wow. Inconsistent is the case. I do believe that they're probably getting ready to look at other options where that's concerned. I do think he'll get the rest of the year, and you're going to see him still out there. And I think he has an opportunity. Let me put it to you this way. I believe he has an opportunity to play himself back into, you know, everyone's good graces this year. I do believe that. You know, if we see a few more 8-catch, you know, 80-yard games out of Watson without the spectacular gaffes involved, you know, the big drops or the fumbles or, you know, what have you, then, yeah, I think that he could still hang on and be a part of this franchise for the foreseeable future, sure. So I think the opportunity is still there. But I'd be willing to, you know, bet you plug nickel now that he doesn't do that, just like I'm willing to wager a plug nickel that, you know, Lawrence Maroney will be, you know, what was it we said earlier? Jackson Revisited. So, you know, that's, again, who knows? He says, that was a heartbreaking loss against the Jets, but I hope that it showed the team what they are capable of coming back from 24-6, shutting the Jets down for almost the entire second half, 500 yards plus of offense. That's right. Says, I seriously hope we go to Miami and beat the living crap out of them. I want another Brady-like 50-3 game to shut Porter up. Yeah, well, I think we'd all kind of like that, although I'm not sure we're going to get it. You know, let me go back, though, to just a second for something he pointed out here, the 500 yards of offense. The most total net yards in a game for this team since 1979. Did you see that note? Yep. 511 total net yards. It was 386 passing net. When you take away the minus rush and the sacks, and 125 rush for the Pats is the franchise's highest offensive output since gaining a franchise record 597 yards in 1979 against the Jets. So the 511 total net, highest since 79, the fourth highest single game total in team history. Last year, in that record-setting scoring, offensive touchdown throwing and catching year for the Patriots, their highest total offense was 510 net yards at Buffalo 1 year ago. In fact, 1 year ago today, exactly, was November 18th, 2007. How do you like them apples? So 511 passed even anything that they did last year. Just it tells me and should show you that offensively this team is beginning to round into some shape now that Matt Castle is getting it. Yes, sure, you've got injuries. You've had injuries in the running backs and with the receivers and, yeah, a little bit at tight end, certainly the quarterback and in the offensive line. There is not a facet of the offense that has not been touched by an injury. But even so, this offense is getting it now, is starting to pick it up, and is starting to increase its production. But as I said in the opening hour today, that's not my chief nitpick today. It is with the defense and the fact that they just don't seem capable of making the in-game adjustments like they have in previous years. This is what that team was so good at in the Super Bowl championship years, that if they identified something in the first quarter, by the second quarter, it was done. Or if it was something in the first half, in the second quarter, at halftime, make the adjustment, second half. Different story. You know it, I know it, we all saw it, we all witnessed it. And yet these in-game adjustments don't seem to be as prevalent as they used to. And that troubles me a little bit. I'm not so sure that it's so much the coaches as it is the players not being able to do the adjusting. That I'm not sure about. Now, it is a little bit alarming to hear Bill Belichick say, you know, well, there wasn't really a need to adjust when you see, you know, a guy like Keller, you know, gash the Patriots up the middle. Time, you know, not only, you know, on that first drive of the ball game, but in the overtime. That was supposed to have been problem solved. I just, oh man, there's no excuse for it. And you know, maybe you do lay that one at the foot of the coaching staff. That should have been a correctable problem, and it just wasn't. And again, maybe it has something to do with some of the inexperience in there. Maybe there were a couple of guys in the wrong place. Otherwise, it would have been. It's possible. You know, I don't have the benefit of, you know, looking at the plays and looking at the film over and over again like the staff does and like the players do. I don't have that benefit here. I'm having to go largely on memory of the play. It's possible somebody was out of position that they had, you know, the thought process at least in place to make the adjustment, but it just was not executed. But when I hear someone say, well, we didn't really see the need to adjust, I'm kind of like, what are you looking at? What am I looking at? Somebody please help me with this one here. What are we looking at? It's like, come on. Seriously? All right. This one, Todd sends a simple one. He says, here's my nitpick. Cover the damn tight end. Yeah, well, I think it goes without saying, doesn't it? You know, here's a kind of interesting thought process where that's concerned. We all know that covering the tight end was largely a job that was left to Rodney Harrison in his particular position. It doesn't seem to me, based on Harrison's absence, that necessarily falls on the shoulders of, say, Brandon Merriweather. Do we really know definitively whose job it is to cover the tight end? See, we've seen a little bit of it fall to Gerard Mayo. We saw a little bit of it, you know, to Adalys Thomas before he was hurt. We're seeing some of it certainly from Brandon Merriweather, although he's really more of a cover safety than anything else, you know, and rolling over the top and doubling on wide receivers based on what I've seen. I mean, it seems like there are three or four different options here to gain, you know, the responsibility of the tight end coming out of the backfield, coming off the offensive line. And maybe it's that way by design, simply because they don't have a Rodney Harrison who could do that and be responsible for his other, you know, duties, his other responsibilities. That's a possibility. But you're right, it was a gaping gaffe, amongst other things. Absolutely gaping. All right, let me get this one from John in before we get into the break here. In an earlier email, I mentioned the refs again. The non-calls are getting worse than the blown calls. I heard you talking about Moss being overthrown. That was not his fault. The corner that was covering him, not Law, grabbed Moss's arm and held him from going downfield. Once Moss broke away, he was gone. But the delay cost him those yards and put him out of reach. Well, then shame on the officiating crew. If that indeed is the case, John, and I don't have the benefit of going back and looking at the film here, but if that is the case, then that would certainly explain it. Because he was overthrown by quite a bit, was he not? If he was held, then the officials should be, you know, reprimanded. Every week, he says, all over the NFL, refs are admitting that they are making blown calls, and some are changing the outcome of games. Not that any ref would ever admit that a bad call was made against the Pats. If they make all these mistakes, then why is it that they can't be criticized? Well, because if you're a player or a coach, you can't outwardly criticize because you would undermine their authority to make calls on the field. There has to be, it's kind of like being in the military. You have to have a total authoritarian here. It's the only way that it works. If everybody questions it, nothing will get done. And then you'd have chaos. So I understand why players and coaches cannot criticize. Doesn't mean you and I can't criticize. We can, and we do often. But a lot of times, though, criticism of officials blowing calls is looked at as, you know, sour grapes, whining and moaning, and bitching and kvetching and all kinds of stuff. Especially if you lost the game. And because the Patriots lost the game, well, someone listening in from the outside could say, oh, you're just whining because you lost. Well, I can understand that, because if we're looking at it from somebody else's point of view, we might say the same thing. So the criticism has no legs. It doesn't have any shelf life. It just dies, and we just go on to the next game. Fortunately, when you have another game to play, it's easier to let bad calls, you know, slide down your backside like water off a duck's back, so to speak. You know, how many other cliches can I get in here today? But it's true. So it's not that they can't be criticized. It's that criticizing them is destructive rather than constructive. I hope that makes sense to you. By the way, that call on in the Pittsburgh game, Pittsburgh-San Diego game, on the last play of the game when Troy Polamalu recovered the fumble and scored an apparent touchdown that would have made it at worst a 17-10 or an 18-10 win for the Steelers rather than the 11-10 final that it was, and the official saying that they blew the call. Wow. Wow is all I can say, because I know many of you are probably aware that spread on that game was what? Pittsburgh and 3 or 3.5, I think it was, at kickoff. And obviously, if that touchdown had counted, there would have been a lot of people who took the Steelers who would have won that game and ended up losing the game. An admitted call by the official. Now, here's what's going to happen, kids, and this is, again, just my own personal opinion. But what's going to happen here is that we have more instances like this where officials blow calls that have definitive outcome. I mean, this would not have changed the winner or the loser of the game, okay? Obviously, it was already 11-10. And so because of that, this is why you don't see the NFL really getting involved here. And it probably, I mean, there may be a reprimand, but nobody's going to lose a gig or lose a job because of it, because it didn't affect the outcome of a game. And of course, the NFL, as they'll tell you, we could care less about point spreads, right? I understand that. That's the official stance. That's what they have to take, even though we all know that people, you know, gamble on NFL games. It's the single biggest sport, I think, that is gambled on in this country, professional football. NFL turns a deaf ear and a blind eye to it, for the most part. But if these kind of things still happen and continue to happen, then I think you're going to have some sort of, you know, system of adjudication put into place. And this also, and I heard this conversation last week as well on a couple of talk shows about why officials are not year-round employees of the NFL. You know, football officials, you know, they officiate games 6 months out of the year. They work football 6 months out of the year, and then they have normal jobs, regular jobs like you and I. You know, they're school teachers, a lot of them, or insurance salespeople, or attorneys, or, you know, what have you. So, you know, salespeople, because that's the easiest kind of job where you can, you know, still work and still do the, you know, job that you have. You know, unless you are ready, unless the National Football League is ready to make these people full-time employees of the NFL, you're going to have this from time to time. It's just going to happen. It's a part of the thing. Now, I don't know that we're ready to have, you know, year-round officials. We have year-round players. Obviously, up until, you know, probably 20 years ago, we didn't have that. Players used, you know, as we've talked about many times, players used, you know, training camp to get into shape for training, even though now it's a year-round affair. Maybe it's time that we start putting the officials on call where this is concerned. But if you do, you know, and that is during the offseason, you have them, you know, look at film, look at tape, attend seminars, go to camps, and do everything else that the players, you know, do in order to stay sharp so they don't blow these calls per se. Well, then you have to be willing to pay them, and you have to be willing to put up with it. You also have to realize that there's always a human element to this, okay? I mean, you know, we jump on players for, you know, bad plays and gaffes and drop passes and mental errors. And yeah, and they're year-round professional athletes. They don't have off-season jobs anymore like they used to back in, you know, the 50s and 60s and 70s. They don't have, you know, off-season jobs anymore. So, you know, if officials are told you can't have an off-season job anymore, that you've got to be an official, they're still going to make mistakes. It doesn't mean you're going to foolproof them. They're still going to make mistakes. So I'm not sure I really see the point in making officials full-time, full-blown employees of the NFL. I think you have to realize that officials are human. We do have a videotape system in place, you know, to take care of the egregious errors. And while that was a doozy of the tail end of the Pittsburgh-San Diego game, I can't say in all honesty that, you know, because it wasn't a game-changing call, I can't say it was an egregious error. It wasn't. It was only egregious if you had Pittsburgh and the points, baby. That's all I can tell you. Sucks to be you if you had that. If you had San Diego and the points, then you are a happy camper. Webradio at patriots.com, 508-543-7482. That's how you get in touch with us here on the program. Let's get another time out of here. We've got some more emails to get to coming up inside the playbook.
What do I love at Qdoba Mexican Grill?
I love this Qdoba Catering.
If you've got a group of folks to feed, Qdoba Catering is totally the way to go.
You've got the hot taco bar,
the hot nacho bar,
the hot naked burrito bar.
Did I mention that they're hot?
I make the phone call and they take care of everything.
People come and they
just help themselves.
They come with everything you'd need to feed a group of hungry people.
Marinated grilled chicken and beef.
Three kinds of salsa.
Fresh lettuce.
Guacamole.
Cookies and
brownies.
Homemade tortilla chips.
Everything.
Oh, we get Qdoba Catering for all kinds of different occasions.
Tailgate parties.
Soccer games.
Birthday parties.
Baby shower. For my son's graduation party. It's perfect for office meetings.
You open the door to the conference room, you get the smell of Qdoba.
Hot bars are totally unique.
It's incredible. People love it. It's fresh.
Affordable.
That's the easy way to plan a party.
That's what I love about Qdoba Mexican Grill.
That's what I love about Qdoba Catering.
Have a group to feed? Order a hot taco, nacho, or naked burrito bar from Qdoba Catering and give them food they'll never forget. What are you going to love at Qdoba?
Big games mean big parties. Feed 20 or more of your friends with a Qdoba hot taco, nacho, or naked burrito bar from Qdoba Catering. It's fast, fresh, and budget-friendly. Now with 16 Massachusetts locations, opening September at Patriot Place in Kenmore Square. Full menu available at Qdoba.com. Patriot Place in Foxborough is the ultimate shopping, dining, and entertainment destination in New England. What's your Patriot Place experience?
We took the kids to a movie at Showcase Cinema Deluxe and finally went to Red Robin. The burgers were amazing. It was so much fun. Everyone loved it.
We had girls' night out at Patriot Place last weekend. A little shopping, dinner at Davio's. It's just like the one in Boston. And we had drinks at the cutest little wine bar called Tastings.
Experience Patriot Place. A once-in-a-lifetime experience every day.
Honestly, I'm here about once a week. I always find great deals at Christmas Tree Shop and Old Navy, and the shoes at Off-Broadway are unbelievable.
Patriot Place is located next to Gillette Stadium in Foxborough with convenient and free parking.
Bass Pro Shop and Eastern Mountain Sports have everything I need for my camping and hiking trips, and we love CBS Scene Restaurant. They've got about a million TVs, and their outdoor deck looks right into Gillette Stadium. It's so cool.
Log on to patriot-place.com for more information. Patriot Place. Everyone wins. We know you have a busy day ahead of you, and mornings are always tough to get through. So stop by your local Dunkin' Donuts today and grab a freshly ground, freshly brewed Dunkin' Donuts coffee. It's the perfect thing to get you going in the morning. Dunkin' Donuts coffee is made with real Arabica beans, which give it that rich flavor everybody loves. And while you're there, try the new egg white flatbread sandwich from the new DD Smart Menu. Choose from two delicious varieties, turkey sausage or veggie. Both served on multi-grain bread. With under 300 calories, you can now make a smarter choice for breakfast. So, stop into your local Dunkin' Donuts today and try one with a medium hot coffee for only $3.99. Price and participation may vary, plus applicable taxes. Limited time offer.
When you've got a lineman-sized hunger and want the awesome, authentic taste of Gillette Stadium at your tailgate or right at home, tackle that appetite with Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Try Sac Attack sausages, first down franks, or Patriots brats in a wide variety of flavors at home, at the stadium, or at the game. And get your crowd cheering for Gridiron Grillers. They're great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are all you'll need for the perfect tailgate or home barbecue. Check out all of the Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Mild and hot Sac Attack sausages, Patriots cheese brats and beer brats, first down franks and more. Patriots Gridiron Grillers go great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are available at Big Y, Demoulas Market Basket, Hannaford, Johnny's Foodmaster, Roach Brothers Sudbury Farm, Shaw's and Stop and Shop, and distributed by Agar, Associated Grocers of Maine and Associate Grocers of New England and CNS Wholesale. Patriots Gridiron Grillers, when you just can't wait for Sunday.
Roll on inside the playbook for a Tuesday here on Patriots.com radio. John Rook here with you as we get ready for the Miami Dolphins in South Florida. Coming up this next Sunday, it'll be a 1 o'clock Eastern time kickoff at Dolphin Stadium. Man, there is a lot riding on this game. I mean, I don't think we soft-pedaled it enough, you know, really, in the opening hour of the show today. You know, I mentioned to Eric Scalavino that this game is the season, as far as I'm concerned. there is a seminal game in every season that you play that, you know, the year is either made or broken on the outcome of a single game. You can usually always narrow it down to 1 week, one game. Shoot, you can darn near narrow it down to one play inside of one game, you know, when you have the benefit of 20/20 hindsight, right? But I think going in, you have to agree here, right? This is the game. I mean, the Patriots are 2-2 in division play. They cannot afford to lose a third divisional game, especially if you have both the Jets and the Dolphins. And well, certainly the Dolphins, if they win this game, look at it this way. All right, let's just look at it from a matter-of-fact point of view. Dolphins win this game, they move to 7-4. Patriots drop to 6-5. And in effect, it is a two-game lead over the Patriots because the Dolphins would have swept the Patriots, so they will hold the tiebreaker. So one-game lead means squat because they still hold the lead. It would be a two-game lead over the Patriots. So you're going to lose any and every tiebreaker that you would have with the Dolphins. And the Jets, even if they lose to Tennessee this week, which certainly is going to be a handful for the Jets, but you know what? Right now, I think I'm one of the few people that gives the Jets a shot in that game. Why not? Their offense is clicking as well as it has all year. Tennessee's coming in feeling pretty good about themselves at 10-0. I certainly think that the Jets have an opportunity to pull a major surprise. I do. I'm not even sure how major a surprise it would be. Don't be shocked if that happens. Now, I push comes to shove, I'd say right now, and again, this is Tuesday speaking to you here, but I'd say as of Tuesday here at 3:37 Eastern time in the afternoon, I'd have to say that Tennessee rates as a favorite and would probably win the game, but I would not be shocked to see the Jets win the game. If Tennessee wins it, then that knocks the Jets back to 7-4, and then the winner, the survivor of Patriots Dolphins, is also 7-4. And if it happens to be the Patriots tied with them at 7-4, and you had beaten the Jets, earlier in September, and you lost to them, so you're 1-1 in the first tiebreaker. So the next tiebreaker comes to what? Well, it comes to conference play. Conference play. And because of that, you're probably, if you're a Jets hater, you're probably rooting for Tennessee to win that game because that would be a conference game. It would be a conference loss. So these are all things that are important at this stage of the game as we start scoreboard watching here in the AFC East. And I realize for a lot of other fans around the AFC East, this is a fun thing because, you know, this has been a division the Patriots have won 5 years in a row now. And, you know, it hasn't been a lot of fun for, you know, fans of the Dolphins or the Jets or certainly the Bills. You know, in the last few years, the Patriots winning everything. I get that. I totally understand that. All things are cyclical in life, and this year it has come back around a little bit. And that's fine. It's made for interesting discussion, and it, you know, it's given us a little bit more to consider, you know, week in and week out. I think in a perfect world, if the Patriots had stayed healthy this year, we're not having this discussion now. And I realize that it's not a perfect world and that injuries are not an excuse. Nobody's ever really used them around here. We're not going to use them either. You know, guys have to step up now. You know, you had built this organization to a point where you were bragging, and all Patriots fans are bragging about the depth that this organization has, that this depth this team has. Well, now it's time to see some of that depth come through. And offensively speaking, the depth has come through. Defensively speaking, the depth has not, for the most part, come through. So now maybe you have to go back in the offseason and do a better job building up your depth. Now, we knew that was a problem going into this previous offseason. That's why they went out and they drafted Jerod Mayo. That was a big reason behind it, but I think we've seen that just Jerod Mayo is not going to solve the problem. Patriots could use another rusher. They could use another linebacker. They could certainly use corners out the wazoo, could they not? Yeah, I think we all realize that. So we will see this team definitively build itself, I believe, defensively once again in this next offseason. That's the difference. That's what this team needs right now more than anything else. But that having been said, in terms of, you know, this week's game, there is absolutely no doubt in my mind this is the key week. You lose this game, you're behind the Jets at least by one game and maybe two if they pull off that win. And even if the Jets win, as long as you win, you know, you have a chance. You're only 1 week away from pulling even and potentially, you know, having a tiebreaker in your advantage. That's how important this week is. You do not have any room for error, especially when it comes to the Dolphins. You must beat the Dolphins. Now, I think most of us realize that since the beginning of 2003, the Patriots are 16-1 in games following a loss. They just don't lose back-to-back. Patriots obviously fell to the Jets last week in overtime, but over the last five-plus seasons, the Pats have lost back-to-back once. That was 2 years ago. On November 5th and November 12th, they lost back-to-back. So that's a good thing. It does tell you that they, you know, do take it week to week. They do prepare. They do take it seriously. We, in fact, you know, let's go back a couple of weeks when we knew we were getting ready to start this three-game gauntlet through the AFC East, and we were talking about the Buffalo matchup, and then you knew you had the Jets after that, followed by the Dolphins. And so before this three-week stretch started, we talked about how this was going to be the pivotal, you know, time of the football season because it was all against divisional opponents. And then I believe all of us here said Patriots needed to go 2-1. If they could go 2-1 through these three games, then they'd at least be in decent shape for the stretch run of the season, getting into the tail end of November and into December, and they'd have every opportunity to win the division. That is still the case. That has not changed. You have to win this game to go 2-1 in this three-game stretch. Hasn't changed at all. So because of that, you know, it really shouldn't be any extra pressure here, should there? No, of course not. Of course not. So in that regard, we're not telling you anything new, I guess, where that's concerned. This is all... It's all right in front of you. And, you know, as an athlete, as a player, you know, even as a fan, all you really need is a shot. All you really want is a chance. And that's what the Patriots are going for. Christopher sends this email. He says, the loss of Rodney Harrison finally came back on the Patriots. I saw Brandon Merriweather miss three tackles Rodney would have made in his sleep. I know if Rodney had come up to tackle Dustin Keller on 3rd and 15, he'd have made the stop and got the Pats the ball back. Well, you know, honestly, Christopher, it's easy to say that now in hindsight. Fact is, we don't know. You'd like to think that Rodney Harrison would have made that tackle. Brandon Merriweather, I still think, is a very good physical talent. But Brandon Merriweather, still to my liking, does not do a very good job of tackling, especially in the open field. He doesn't wrap guys up. Brandon Merriweather comes from the University of Miami School of, you know, punching guys. And by punching, I mean, you know, hitting them with a body shot, but he doesn't wrap them up. Have you noticed how all you guys do that? If you're a Miami player, how you try to hit them physically, but you don't wrap them up. It's one of the things that has driven me one of the most crazy things about, you know, Miami players, Miami defensive backs and linebackers. They don't wrap guys up very well. And maybe that's changing, but, you know, that's the kind of byproduct that Brandon Merriweather came from. So, you know, to say that Rodney would have made the tackle, well, we'd like to think that he would have, but obviously we'll never know. The one criticism you can have is Brandon Merriweather wrapping a guy up, which he doesn't do very well. Jack, what is the rule regarding non-active players on the sidelines during a game? I often see injured players on the sidelines during a game. I also wonder, wouldn't it have been amazing if Tom Brady had made an appearance during the Jets game last week? Well, I don't think there's a rule per se. Dan, do we know that at all? I don't think there's a rule per se about non-active players on the sideline. I think that the NFL asks you not to have non-active players on the sideline. But would you be penalized if you had one on the sideline? I don't know the answer to that. I don't think so. I don't think so. Fact is that if a guy like Tom Brady were on the sideline, it would be too much of a three-ring circus for a lot of the fans in the stands, and the television cameras would all be focused on it, and no injured player who is unable to make a contribution to the team's efforts on the field wants to put himself or his teammates in that kind of a position. If Brady is there at all, he's in a private box somewhere where no one can see him and no one knows he's there. That's just the way it is. They usually tell inactive players, especially rehabbing players, to stay away on game day. That's usually what happens. John in Fayetteville, Georgia says, hi, John. If Castle continues to play well this year, here's what I think the Pats should do. If they put the franchise tag on him, they very well could be a team that will pick him up and pay the two first-round draft picks to get him. Couldn't think of a better way to move up in the draft than that. Well, you know, that is a thought. And we did have an emailer earlier, John, that suggested that maybe what you do is you work out a deal in advance with another team. Say, just for argument's sake here, say San Francisco, okay? You don't want to send him to a divisional team if you can avoid it, right? Let's say you work out a deal in advance with San Francisco. All right, here's what we'll do. We're going to franchise him, and we're going to hold him for you. In return, you know, you're going to give us the draft picks to get him. If you could work out a deal like that in advance with the team, okay, great. But keep in mind now that you have to be ready for, you know, the curveball. I mean, I don't know, you know, how you hold somebody's feet to the fire where if you franchise a guy and all of a sudden the other team backs out of it because they decide that they want to, you know, keep their own first-round pick and they decided, well, we can't give away this year and next year. Here's the key. If you look at the upcoming draft, if you can figure out if a team somewhere has two first-round picks. And if a team has two first-round picks, do they have a need at starting quarterback? If you can find a team like that, well, then obviously there's an easy target for you, right? And that's an easy team to, you know, to go after. I think, John, it sounds pretty good in principle. I don't know if in reality it works out that simply. But you're absolutely right. If you could find a way to work out a deal with the team, then by all means, you know, here's what I think will happen. If you see the Patriots put the franchise tag on Matt Castle, yeah, they've worked out a deal with somebody in advance. Don't you think? Hey, John, how much could the current economic climate, the Crafts whacking Gary and Mike, which stinks, by the way, could the unwillingness for the Crafts to pay Law the extra money be in the same vein? It has absolutely nothing to do with one or the other. It has nothing to do with it. You know, it's different part of the budget, different, you know, that's just how they kind of, you know, move money around. I mean, you have different budgets and, you know, different companies and things like that. One does not have the same to do with the other. I can almost assure you of that. Cormac from Ireland. Guys, I'm just reading on PFWinProgress.com that Gary and Mike have been let go because of the cutbacks. I'm so sad and shocked by this. I'll miss them both terribly, but nowhere near as much as you guys will, losing not only two great colleagues but two friends. I'm sad to say that I'm sure the show will suffer without Gary's production values, and I'll miss Mike's slice of Giants love, too. Anyway, I hope the guys are okay, and you guys all take care. Cormac, we appreciate your thoughts your sentiments. I mentioned earlier in the program, and I know PFW has also talked about it a little bit, that, yeah, you know, we were all shocked and saddened by it, but unfortunately because of the current economic climate that we're in, nobody is safe. It just so happens that because of the way the budgets break out and what needed to be cut in certain areas, that those were two areas in which, you know, those two guys were deemed expendable. It does suck. But I think we all realize in this current economic world that we live in, this is going to be the rule rather than the exception, that even, you know, the New England Patriots are not, invincible and unfortunately are susceptible to the same, you know, economic downturns as the rest of the world is. And you and I and our own businesses and everything else that we do, we're all susceptible to it until we can all figure out a way to fix this problem. And we just have to kind of ride out the storm and hope that, you know, when, you know, revenues start to improve and bookings start to increase here, you know, at the stadium and things along those lines, that, you know, things like this won't happen anymore. Maybe people get hired back. Who knows? I mean, I am a firm believer in never saying never. That makes sense to you. Never say never. Because you just don't know. You don't know what could come back. You don't know what you could take advantage of. You just don't know. And so in that regard, I think we're all hopeful that, you know, those two guys land on their feet rather quickly, which I think they will. And when they do, that at some point in time, if things do turn around here, that if given the opportunity, you know, they would, you know, have enough, you know, love, you know, for the people they've worked with to come back and do that. Frankly, you know, I think you and I both realize that, you know, here's the situation. When someone decides and you're told that you're not wanted anymore, you don't waste a whole lot of time worrying about those people anymore. That's just a human nature way of going about moving on with your life and your jobs. And it sucks that we have to, you know, we're here left, you know, thinking about it, but it's, you know, it's life. We all have to move on here, and that's what we're going to do. But we'll pass along your sentiments to them. Trust me, we'll do that. And I'm sure they know. James in Roanoke Rapids, North Carolina. John, I say the main things I can put my finger on that has caused the last two losses are, one, the inability to put the ball into the end zone instead of settling for a field goal. Yeah, you know what? I'm glad you brought that up, James. You know, and leave it to you to point out the obvious. That's great because you're always good at focusing on that. But, yes, you know, while the Patriots are moving the ball and they're getting nice yards and you know, they put up 31 this last week on the board, but the fact is that they're still underperforming in the red zone. They're still settling. I was of the opinion when they went for both, I think, of those first two field goals of going for it on fourth down. We were talking about it in the booth. It's kind of like, they should go for it here, you know. You know, because they were already down in the game. Come on, make a statement, you know? Make a statement. Punch it in. Get it in there. I think we all kind of wanted that, didn't we? So you're absolutely right, James, about that. The inability to put the ball into the end zone instead of settling for field goals is a problem that this offense still has. Is it getting better? Yes. Do they still have their problems? Sure they do. And he also says, with all of the injuries to the defense, you have less players who you can count on to make that big play at the end of the game. When you have to stop the opposing team from scoring. On top of that, those teams seem to know this and can concentrate on either staying away from the few big playmakers who are left or are planning their two-minute offenses to go where they know there is not going to be one of these playmakers. I have to think about that for a second. Less players you can count on to make a big play at the end of the game. That's right. And we sort of paraphrase that by saying you need guys who can step up and make a play. Yeah, playmakers. Good point, James. That is one thing that this defense is sorely lacking. And I kept thinking that throughout the entire drive in overtime when the Jets had the ball last Thursday night. God, we need somebody to step and make a play. Somebody's got to step up and make a play. Somebody, please step up and make a play. And, of course, it never happened. And because it never happened, then the Jets were able to put themselves in position to kick the field goal and obviously win the football game and make the Patriots now have to play a little, not just a little, how about a lot of catch-up in terms of, you know, going into the game this weekend with the Dolphins and, you know, and future games as well. They're playing catch-up now when they had destiny still in their own hands. Now they need some help. Now they need some help. Won't be easy to do. Tomorrow's show, going to be a good one as well. Normally on Wednesdays, we get a chance to listen to the opponent players and coaches' conference calls, and I'm begging for Joey Porter to be a part of the conference call. What do you think the chances are of that tomorrow? So? I'm guessing that there will be a request to our good friend Harvey Green, who is the Vice President for Communications there, Public Relations for the Dolphins, who has actually been a frequent contributor to this program in the past whenever we play the Dolphins. But I'm guessing there will be a demand for Joey Porter. I don't know that they'll be able to fulfill that tomorrow, but, you know, we'll let you know tomorrow when we bring the program to airtime. Suffice to say, Tony Sperano, the head coach, will be a part of the conference calls as well. We'll probably get inside the locker room tomorrow as well. And, oh, yeah, Dan Dierdorf from CBS Sports. He'll be a part of the broadcast crew for CBS along with Greg Gumbel this Sunday covering the game on television. Dan Dierdorf will be on our program tomorrow. So you want to tune in for that starting at 2 p.m. Eastern time, or download the podcast for later if you can't make it live there, kids. That'll be a part of tomorrow's show. And like we said, conference calls and probably have a couple of other surprises for you as well in the Wednesday playbook. So we've got all of that coming up for you tomorrow. I cannot underscore this enough. Saturday's game against the Dolphins is big. And it comes at a place which the Patriots traditionally just have not played very well. I think we all know that, right? We do all remember that, right? Miami has long been a place in which the Patriots have failed miserably. The all-time record in Miami for the Patriots, 10-32. And, you know, frankly, when I first saw that number, I'm thinking, wow, they won 10 games? They won that many? I didn't even know that. It didn't seem like they'd ever won that many. It seemed like every time they go to Miami, they get, you know, beat or spanked, no less. Patriots were a woeful 3-18 in the Orange Bowl. Thank goodness that place is now imploded. At Dolphins/Pro Players/Joe Robbie Stadium, they are 7-14, so there's a little more success, particularly in that particular venue. Dolphins are going for a series sweep, though. Going for a series, a season sweep. There have been 19 sweeps in the matchup between these two teams. The Dolphins have 13 of them. The Patriots just 6. So now are you beginning to get a sense of what we're talking about here, how tough it really is? I mean, if you're a longtime Patriots fan, you probably already realize that, but how tough it really is to play the Dolphins in Miami? It's tough. It always is tough. In fact, Bill Belichick, his all-time record against Miami, 9 wins, 10 losses. And he's just 9-8 as head coach of the Patriots. So for all the successes the Patriots have had, you know, in this decade, since the turn of the century, since the turn of the millennium, fact is the Patriots have still struggled with the Miami Dolphins, if you look at it from a big-picture point of view. And we're asking them to go down and win in a place in which they don't traditionally play very well, last year notwithstanding. So let's give that some thought over the next 24 hours. And then when we reconvene here on the program tomorrow, I want you to let it sink in, and I want you to give me your feelings on that and whether or not you think this is an insurmountable task. Are we asking too much of the New England Patriots? Are we asking too much of these guys? Take a look at the way this team is presently consistent on offense, especially on defense, with all the injuries. Take all of this into consideration. Are we asking too much of these guys? Will you be crushed? Will you be disappointed if they can't win this game on Sunday? Again, consider all the odds stacked against them. Consider the record. Consider the track record. Consider the past history, which obviously does come into play. It may not consciously come into play. It does come into play. In some form or fashion, it's there. It's tangible. It's something that's felt. So when we reconvene tomorrow's program, I'll ask you again whether or not you think, are we asking too much of these guys to go in and win this football game? My initial response is no, it's their job. But take all this other stuff in consideration. Let me know if it changes your thought process at all, huh? I'll look forward to your responses. Webradio@patriots.com. That's how, of course, you can send them to me. Don't forget tomorrow's show, same Pat's time, same Pat's channel, right here inside the playbook.